haunt you, lost in your own fear. No compass, find your way out. A troglodyte, a derelict barn campaign. Pretend the filthy rich to the beggar's ditch. God.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Glenn Johnson, who is the politics editor at the Boston Globe's online component, boston.com, and lead blogger for the site's blog, Political Intelligence. He has reported on local, state, and national politics for over 25 years and covered Mitt Romney's campaign during the 2008 election and is covering the current campaign. Welcome to Background Briefing, Glenn Johnson.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Ian.
And the speech that Mitt Romney made last night, the acceptance speech or the victory speech, coming fairly early in the night since he was such a resounding winner, it seemed to lay out some of the contours for what might be his campaign themes. Did you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. I was out in Iowa last week, and it was, you know, obviously a nail-biter of a night, you know, as the vote tally seesawed back between him and Rick Santorum, and they were ready to give this exact speech last week in Des Moines. They figured that they were going to stage an upset win, that he was going to win in a state where he hadn't really competed as aggressively as 4 years ago. And they had the whole thing queued up, teleprompter all ready to go. And then as it became clear it wasn't going to be a resounding victory, if a win at all, they took that all down, and he just gave a standard stump speech. Whereas last night, the exit poll showed him winning even before the results were announced, and they were ready to go and set the narrative not only for the night but for what they hope will be the rest of the campaign.
So given that it's a different electorate down in South Carolina than right. New Hampshire, and already the knives are being sharpened, Sheldon Adelson's given Newt Gingrich over $5 million to pay back Romney for his super PACs at taking, what, 20 points out of Gingrich's hide in Iowa. And both Gingrich and Perry are talking about Romney as a vulture capitalist.
Right.
I was amused to see that that in his acceptance speech last night, Romney, in attacking President Obama, said he wants to put free enterprise on trial. It looks like the other guy, his own opponents, are doing that.
Yeah, well, that was a twofold message. I mean, he even was specific enough to say even someone of our own party want to put capitalism on trial. That seems to be, you know, the response that they've settled on. But make no mistake, the viciousness of the attack in the debates over the weekend, especially Sundays, and, you know, this $3.4 million bomb or whatever it is that's about to get detonated down in South Carolina, you know, that's an issue that they're going to have to deal with. Frankly, some Republicans actually feel that it's good that it's coming out now, that this was inevitable with President Obama should he be the nominee. But there is some surprise that it's his fellow Republicans really, you know, taking, you know, this attack to him this early on this subject matter.
Well, obviously, politics doesn't have to be about the real world. It's about what you can say and what you can get away with. But it does seem that Romney is inventing an Obama that it doesn't seem to be any remotely like the real Obama, as much as he's referring to him as a socialist who gets his guidance from European capitals, not Main Street USA. And interesting enough, Obama has more problems with his own progressive base, who think he's been too soft on Wall Street and has essentially rolled over for Wall Street.
Right. Yeah, as you said, it's a narrative. You know, if it's attached to reality, it's all the better. But, you know, they've settled on this storyline. Much of that speech was standard stump that I've heard him now giving both in Iowa and New Hampshire. There was a few parts that were just, you know, a little more icing on top. But, you know, they've settled on this idea that the president, you know, is creating this welfare society, and that they're the capitalist protectors, And so, you know, the narrative and the device that they use is, you know, I want to create an opportunity society, whereas the president wants to create an entitlement society. And he wants to divide the pie, and I want to expand it. And so whether that has any bearing on reality, doesn't matter. That's the thematic that they want to impose on this election right now. And that's something you can do in a vacuum. You know, he's not the nominee yet. He's still got a few more contests to go. But once he does become the nominee, there's going to be somebody that's going to specifically respond to that criticism, and that's going to be the president himself. So in a vacuum, you can make that kind of thing, and you and I can sort of question its accuracy. But once he has a real, live, breathing opponent, there's going to be somebody that's going to be able to answer that challenge to him.
So, again, I'm speaking with Glenn Johnson, who is the politics editor at the Boston Globe's online component, boston.com, and lead blogger for the site's blog, Political Intelligence. He's been covering Romney for a number of years, covered the 2008 campaign, and is covering the current campaign. I understand, according to a front-page story in the Los Angeles Times, that Romney has developed a very advanced data mining system that allows him to target potential voters, getting reams of consumer information from them, you know, market targeting them, you know, finding out where they, you know, what they bought at Williams-Sonoma, et cetera, puts what income bracket they are, and what magazines they subscribe to. I mean, it's all very Orwellian what's going on, but he's apparently way ahead of the pack on this one. Do you know anything more about that?
Well, no, I mean, I know Mae Reston wrote that story, and it's a very good story, but it is something that all the campaigns have gotten into now. I think that the Obama team was very proficient at this in 2008. Romney likes to, you know, tell everybody that he likes to wallow in data, and he certainly has the finances to support this kind of activity. And so, you know, it's not that much of a surprise that they're taking what was in 08 and taking it to the next level. In his 08 campaign, they were very sophisticated in using social media to raise money as well, something, again, that the president's campaign did quite well with his too. But, you know, it's just always startling to read, you know, the way that they can match public data with voter registration information and really try and identify their most vociferous and active supporters and discard those that they don't feel will be backing them. And it's a little unnerving, too, when you read how it all actually works.
So do you think, given that Romney's getting a critique from Republicans that is sort of very left-wing populist, in as much as he's a, you know, Romney certainly is, I think, a real candidate as a one-percenter. I think he probably unquestionably is a one-percenter, and that, given his fortune and his Wall Street connections. Is it likely, though, that he will get a critique from the right in terms of, as opposed to the left, in terms of his business practices? Because I think there is a critique to be made that there is something wrong with this extractive capitalism that's been going on Wall Street. A number of leading economists have talked about it, that it's unsustainable. And we know that the division of wealth in this country is growing. The divide is going greater and greater. And much of Bain Capital is that extraction of wealth and the concentration at the top amongst the people who put the deals together. They walk away incredibly rich. The CEOs do well, but the company is laden with tremendous debts that they have to pay off for these leveraged buyout deals to happen in the first place. So there's something inherently unhealthy about it, I think, from a capitalist point of view.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the private equity leveraged buyout side of it. You know, Mitt Romney and his supporters always talk about the venture capital angel financing, you know, the support for the business being built in somebody's garage. That's the one that they talk about. They don't talk about the AMPADs where they went in there and charged huge fees, ran up huge debts, and eventually the company went bankrupt. They talk about the Staples and the Bright Horizons, places where they provided a little bit of seed money, and those companies went on their own and built themselves up. So, you know, you're seeing that split already in the Republican intelligentsia right now. As this Romney issue gets debated, there's some people, you know, Rush Limbaugh on down, who are just seething at Newt Gingrich, feeling that he's just doing the president's work for him by dropping this kind of money bomb on Romney and running this half-hour ad against him and complaining and highlighting about all the bad side of the Bain investment portfolio. And then you get other people who, you know, Wall Street Journal editorial page yesterday, that are talking about how this really is, you know, the way capitalist society works, and Romney, you know, had helped not only create jobs but improve the operation of the economy by, you know, weaning out these bad companies and building up the ones that could be saved. And so, you know, I guess it's just, you know, where you come down on this. You know, in some ways it sets up tough for the Republicans heading into a general election should Romney be the nominee, because it's going to dovetail perfectly with the message being espoused nationally by the president and here locally in Massachusetts by Elizabeth Warren, most likely, that they are the ones fighting for the middle class and the Republican candidates are the ones fighting for the 1%.
Well, I must say, every time Romney tries to be a regular guy, he just flubs it, you know, painfully.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, his kids, I talk to them about this a lot, and they're always telling me, regaling me with stories about what a practical joker he is. And then, you know, when you're on the rope line with him or following him around, you know, he'll just make the most awkward comments. And I don't know if it's jitters, you know, if it really is that he doesn't have that personal warmth or what, but sometimes he falls back on really curious devices. He'll just walk up to somebody and try and guess their age. And, you know, he's walked up to people. One of our reporters was standing with him. He walked up to two people sitting in a diner booth together, and he said, "Are you two together?" You know, I mean, they were sitting in two people in a two-seat booth, and he asked if they were together. It was just this kind of nervous tic.
I guess they were of a different sex, right?
Yes. I think he just felt like he should say something, but didn't quite know what to say. And so it does become a challenge for him, and that will be an issue. You know, I've covered enough campaigns now that you see that personal connection, if not dispositive of the outcome, is definitely an important part of it.
So when he kept repeating in Iowa, America the Beautiful, amber waves of grain, you know,
right.
I mean, it just seems incredibly corny, but maybe the guy is, you know, he's very square, isn't he?
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, I actually was talking to some of his advisors about it. And, you know, there's like the people here know his stump speech. They know the broad brushstrokes of what he stands for, and they want to feel good. And so they're giving them what they think they want, and that's this, you know, God Bless America themed campaign speech. You know, it's more part of the narrative than it is a part of anything else. But, you know, he likes to talk about, you know, this very red, white, and blue country, and you know, I don't think anybody denies any of that. But he seems to feel that the audience likes it, and he does get a decent response out there. It's funny to see some of the subsequent reporting. You know, I mean, who wrote some of these verses that he quotes? You know, who's behind the poetry of it? It's not necessarily people that he would think have been the authors of it.
So you mentioned these five sons who appear on stage, and they're a pretty handsome bunch of young men. Does he have a daughter?
No. He's got the five boys. He married young, met his wife when she was especially young. She was only 15 when they first started going out. And then his father, George, really took her under his wing and helped her convert to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, all while Mitt was overseas as a Mormon mission. And then they had these sons, starting with Taggart, the oldest, while Mitt was at Harvard in business and law school. And, you know, now each of the boys is married, and they're up to 16 grandkids. So it's really, you know, I think half the stage is usually just his family.
Well, I thank you for joining us, and hopefully we can stay in touch. It looks like he'll be the nominee, and there'll be a lot more to talk about in the coming year.
Yeah, for sure. I think this election will come into focus in fairly short order here. And then, you know, it's going to be a long general election campaign from that point on.
Well, thanks a lot, Glenn Johnson.
Anytime, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Glenn Johnson, who is the politics editor at the Boston Globe's online component, boston.com, and lead blogger for the site's blog, Political Intelligence. He has reported on local, state, and national politics for over 25 years and covered Mitt Romney's campaign during the 2008 election and is covering the current campaign. We're going to take a brief station break, and then we'll come back and go to Caracas, Venezuela, to get an update on Hugo Chavez and the visit by Iranian President Ahmadinejad. This is a call.